The samurai Minamoto no Yoshitsune was born around 1159. From the start, his life was rough. His father, the general Minamoto no Yoshitomo, backed the losing side in the Heiji Rebellion against the emperor, and was killed alongside his two oldest sons when Yoshitsune wasn't yet 1 year old. Like a protagonist in a wuxia movie, when Yoshitsune turned 10, he was sent to Kurama Temple, a secluded shrine on a mountaintop, to be raised by the monks there and trained in combat. Later, he fled the temple and came under the protection of one Fujiwara no Hidehira in Hirazumi, in the northern part of the country. Put a pin in that for later. As a young man, he became a skilled military leader. He joined his half-brother Yoritomo, who would later become the first shogun to rule all of Japan, and helped him win the war against the Taira clan, one of the four main samurai families that vied for control over Japan at the time, and the mortal enemy of his Minamoto clan. Many of the key Minamoto victories in what would eventually be known as the Genpei War were attributed to Yoshitsune, including the climactic battle, which saw the remaining Taira clan army getting wiped out. But for some reason, Yoritomo later turned against his brother. Some said it was because Yoshitsune had gotten too cocky, or that the emperor himself had given him a position which Yoritomo didn't approve of. Yoshitsune escaped back north, to his one-time hometown of Hirazumi. But on June 15th, 1189, after a fierce resistance from his retainers, Yoshitsune was eventually caught, and cornered, he committed seppuku. His head was brought back to Yoritomo as proof of his death. He was 30 years old. Yoshitsune was one of those figures whose legend only grew after his death. He was a central character in the samurai epic, The Tale of Heike, inspired the very word in Japanese for an underdog hero, and took on a literary prominence far beyond anything he'd actually done in life. It became very hard to tell what's true from what's not about Yoshitsune, to the point that I bet a lot of Japanese people don't even know he was a real historical figure. Some said he studied martial arts from the Tengu. These guys. Ever wonder what this emoji is? It's a Tengu. They're goblins, sort of. At least this one is. They don't all look like this, and they're usually depicted as more bird-like in historic sources. Despite their appearance and common translation of Tengu as goblins, they're meant to be good guys. Yoshitsune is central to the legend of the Tengu, as he is to Japanese classical literature. He showed up in no and kabuki plays. Even today, there are books, movies, TV shows, manga, anime, video games with him in it. If you've interacted with Japanese media in some way at any point, you've seen this guy. But there may have been a different way Yoshitsune was larger than life after his death. According to a theory genuinely believed by some serious Japanese historians, Yoshitsune didn't actually die that day when he was cornered up north. Instead, he fled from the north to the northern north, and from there to the mainland, took on a new name, flexed his samurai background to corral some steppe nomads together, became the man we know as Genghis Khan. I'm your host, Tor Parsons. These are my co-hosts, Jollibee the Durian, Sluz the Shoggoth, Chugi the Axolotl, and Thimble the Doll, and welcome to Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities. Yoshitsune reminds me of Elvis. In this way and this way only. He clearly, obviously died when the historical record says he did. And the fact that there are rumors he survived almost seems like it's because of that. He couldn't be deader. So isn't it fun to speculate he survived? Yoshitsune committed seppuku in front of several friends and enemies. And wasn't his severed head shown to his brother to confirm he was dead? Well, let's look a little bit closer at that. The first recorded instance of the Yoshitsune lived theory, as I would like to call it, was in the Honchō Tsugan, the Comprehensive Mirror of Japan, a 326-volume work on the history of Japan written in the mid-17th century by a research team of 95 people. The 79th volume contained a biography of Yoshitsune, which followed the conventional narrative, but also casually added a note that there was a rumor he actually survived and fled to Ezo, where his descendants remain there. Ezo was the old name for Hokkaido, the northernmost major island of Japan, which at the time was considered only sorta part of Japan. It wasn't seriously settled by the Japanese until the 19th century, and before then was the territory of the Ainu people, who are descended from the Japanese genetically speaking, but are culturally closer to the indigenous people of Siberia and Alaska. The kanji used to write Ezo literally mean shrimp barbarians, seemingly in reference to the big shaggy beards worn by Ainu men, which apparently reminded Japanese people of shrimp antenna. The Ainu's fighting skills were not as shrimpy, though, and for centuries they were considered Japan's mortal enemy. The very word, shogun, comes from an abbreviation of Commander of the Expeditions Against the Northern Barbarians, i.e. the Ainu. Fleeing to Ezo in those days had the same connotations as fleeing to Canada. It's foreign, but easy to jump the border. The nearest faraway place. Another early mention of the Yoshitsune lived rumor was in the Dai Nihonshi, another multi-volume history series where the author went on a weird tangent about whether or not the head that was carried to Yoritomo at the time was really Yoshitsune's, because more than 40 days had passed from Yoshitsune's reported death to his head arriving at Yoritomo's headquarters down south. Headquarters. And it was during a hot and humid summer, so the head would probably have been in an advanced state of decomposition, making it unrecognizable. So it could be someone else, right? Some sources say the head was preserved in sake, but that might be one of the many myths that has sprung up around Yoshitsune. After that, the Yoshitsune lived theory started popping up in more texts, one in particular called the Zantaheki, which dated back to 1690, mentioned not just that Yoshitsune survived, but that he also fled to Ezo and was worshipped there by the locals as a god with the name Yoshitsune Daimyojin. Now, Yoshitsune's connection with Ezo seemed to have started long before all of these. One tale from the late 1500s, called Onzoshi Shimawatari, or Voyage of the Prince to the Northern Islands, tells a story about Yoshitsune traveling to an island in the north to retrieve a secret text from a 160-foot-tall demon king with the help of a princess. He defeats the demon king with his epic flute playing. This is the sort of portrayal of Minamoto no Yoshitsune that was common for centuries in Japan. See why I said that I don't know if most Japanese people today know Yoshitsune was a real person? It would be like an American learning that Paul Bunyan was a real historical figure and was a genuinely very big and strong, but within mortal human bounds, lumberjack in Minnesota. But the Demon King magic flute version of the Yoshitsune went to Ezo story takes place during Yoshitsune's stay in Hirazumi when he was a young man, when he was still canonically uncontroversially alive, and thus implied that all the events after it happened are just like in recorded history. It also may not take place in the area modern Japanese know as Hokkaido. The name Ezo seemed to not be a reference to a specific place, but rather a generic term for a faraway, distant location. The story itself inspired a puppet play called Minamoto no Yoshitsune Shogiko, Minamoto no Yoshitsune's Shogi Instructions. Shogi is a strategy game like chess. In this one, Yoshitsune went to the fictional island of Nyogogashima instead of Ezo. This story later got merged with the Yoshitsune survived theory in one recorded in the 1850 book Sanko Ezo Nishi, Diary of My Third Voyage to Ezo, by Matsura Takashiro. He documented a tale reportedly told by local Ainu people, which is about how Yoshitsune had gotten there, married into the local chieftain's family, and then stole a scroll from that family and ran away to Manchuria to continue his adventures. Yeah, why not? By the time this book was written, the Yoshitsune survived theory had developed in many different directions. This isn't the first time he was said to have fled to Manchuria. This was fleshed out in much more detail in other retellings. Some stories had him becoming a general of the Jin Dynasty, flat tone, the dynasty that ruled northern China during his lifetime, not to be confused with the Jin Dynasty, descending tone, who ruled China much earlier. The Jin flat tone were ethnically Manchurian, or Jurchen as it was called back then, the same ethnic group that would later take power under the Qing dynasty, China's last imperial dynasty. Later stories had Yoshitsune become the ancestor of the Qing dynasty. And of course, some had him become Genghis Khan. Now, Yoshitsune lived from 1159 to 1189. Genghis Khan was born right around the same time. The range historians usually give for his potential birth year is 1155 to 1167. Those two particular years are the main candidates because Mongol and Chinese tradition holds that he was born in the year of the pig on the Chinese zodiac. But where was that sourced from? We don't know. In fact, there's a remarkable amount about the background of Genghis Khan we don't know. This popular image of him was made almost 50 years after he died. We have no impressions of what he looked like from people who had actually seen him. The Secret History of the Mongols is the main historical record of Genghis Khan's rise to power, and it was A, probably written not long after Genghis Khan's death, and B, includes embarrassing details like describing the Khan's fear of dogs, which is one of the reasons it was secret for the Mongol royal family's eyes only. Those two things, being written when Genghis Khan was fresh in people's memories, and what historians called a criterion of embarrassment, make the Secret History not a terrible source. But it also says that one of the Khan's ancestors was impregnated by a glowing man who came down the chimney of her yurt. Have you ever seen Minamoto no Yoshitsune and Genghis Khan in the same room together? Well, no, and there's quite a bit more contemporary documentation of Yoshitsune's life than there is of the young Khan back when he went by Temujin. The gap in documentation is simply for the obvious reason that Japan was a much more literate culture than Mongolia. That there was a brave young warlord in Mongolia named Temujin during the same years that Yoshitsune was kicking ass in Japan is a historical fact. But Temujin lost a major battle in 1187, 2 years before Yoshitsune officially died in 1189, and he dropped out of the Mongol historical record for several years. To this day, it's not clear what Temujin was doing during those years until he resurfaced in 1196, suddenly back in Mongolia, having gained charisma and skill in battle. Is it too crazy to suggest this was not the same Temujin? In 1879, an essay with the rather mouthful title, The Identity of the Great Conqueror Genghis Khan with the Japanese Hero Yoshitsune, An Historical Thesis, written by one K. Suyamats, was published in London. Who was this K. Suyamats? He was Suematsu Kensho, who studied at University College London and later Cambridge University. But Suematsu was not an ordinary international student. He worked as a journalist for the Tokyo Nichi-Nichi Shimbun and befriended the editor-in-chief, Fukuchi Genichiro, who introduced him to the Prime Minister of Japan at the time and helped Suematsu gain a position in the new Meiji government. In England, besides his studies, Suematsu also informed the Prime Minister through letters on his latest news in Europe and other useful information, and he was also commissioned by the new Office of Historiography to study English and French historiography and, quote, provide the office with knowledge of modern historiography. Later on, he did a goodwill tour of Europe to counter the anti-Japanese racism of the time and to argue for Japan's side on the ongoing Russo-Japanese War, which I already made one of my favorite early episodes about. Suematsu also translated the Tale of Genji to English, the first person to do so. So, what's in this strange history thesis? What are Suematsu's arguments? Well, first of all, to say the very least, he had very little to work with. But he wrote anyway, a whole 150 pages of it. He tried to draw a connection between Yoshitsune's early disappearance and Genghis Khan's late appearance in historical records, and that the Chinese reading of Yoshitsune's name, Gunjike, kinda sounds like Genghis Khan, doesn't it? We don't know what the name Genghis Khan even means. According to the official historical record, Temujin chose that name for himself in 1206, after he had conquered all of Mongolia, but before he had really started to conquer the rest of the world. There are lots of theories of what Genghis Khan could possibly mean. Could one of them be that it was a mishearing of Yoshitsune's Chinese name? Sure, why not? Suematsu had studied the cutting-edge historical research techniques used by Western scholars in Japan's Westaboo phase, where they were obsessed with copying everything the European powers did, and he said, maybe. And to make his argument more credible, Suematsu latched onto the Yoshitsune lived story of he went to Ezo and became a god variety. Quote, Indeed, Yoshitsune's escape to the island of Yezo is an indisputable fact. The Ainus hand down so many legends about him. They love and admire him. They have built a large shrine to his memory. They mark out so many places which are said to have had some connection with his actions. And lastly, they deify and still worship him. Source, please? The Ainu have a large shrine to Yoshitsune? Where? Somewhere in Hokkaido, presumably. To be fair to Suematsu, he wasn't the first person to suggest that Yoshitsune was Genghis Khan, nor was he the first one who wrote about it in English. William Ellett Griffiths, a minister who taught at a Japanese school, the forerunner of Tokyo Imperial University, referred to it in his book The Mikado Empire, and Philip von Siebold, a German physician and naturalist who came to Japan in 1823 with the Dutch East India Company, also referenced it in his Archiv zur Beschreibung von Japan und dessen Nebel- und Schutzländer, Archive for the Description of Japan and its Tributary Countries and Protectorates. Siebold is often credited as the guy who first wrote down the Yoshitsune Genghis Khan theory, and he also had a fascinating life on his own. One of the canonical old-school weebs, a guy who moved to Japan and married a Japanese woman even before Japan had officially opened to the outside world. But Suematsu's work seemed to have popularized the theory. Wikipedia inaccurately credits Suematsu with inventing it. In 1885, a Japanese translation of Suematsu's work was published with the title Yoshitsune Saikoki, or Account of Yoshitsune's Revival. It was so popular that it got reprinted several times. Later authors also published their own takes on the theory, such as Oyabi Zenichiro, with his 1924 book Genghis Khan is Minamoto no Yoshitsune. The book actually got criticized hard by various scholars, like the linguist Kindaichi Kiyosuke, who studied the Ainu language. The scholars who criticized it dismissed it as a sentimental narrative for a popular tragic hero. Basically, to make this comparison again, Oyabi was being the Japanese equivalent of that lady who said she saw Elvis at a Burger King in Michigan. Oyabi was also a big fan of the Japanese-Jewish common ancestry theory, which is its own whole can of gefilte fish that I could easily do a whole episode on in itself, but I'll give you the cliff notes. As Europe went out and conquered the world, it was not too rare for them to claim that any given people they encountered were descendants of the 10 lost tribes of Israel, and therefore they were Jewish, and therefore deserving of some special treatment relative to the savage barbarians around them. It would have been nice if they'd extended that line of thinking to the Jews in their own countries, but whatever. The Japanese-Jewish connection seems to have come from the European observation that the Japanese are a fastidious, systems-thinking, technologically advanced society, and how did such a civilized people end up here on the barbarian fringes of Asia? This was mostly a weird European phenomenon until the 20th century, but as Japanese nationalism became more powerful, many in Japan embraced this theory too, realizing it could be construed as a eugenic justification for Japan's superiority. Ironically, this is also the mentality that led Japanese nationalists to ally themselves with the Nazis. To this day, a lot of East Asian countries feel a cultural kinship with the Jews in ways that Jewish people may not really like. I talked about this a little in my video about Mao's American ally Sidney Rittenberg way back when, and there were other American Jews in China at the time, like this guy, who had this name. I'm sorry, man, you couldn't have guessed what it would sound like. When I studied abroad in China, several members of the American exchange student group I was part of were Jewish, and when they told Chinese people that, it wasn't too rare to get a response like, "Wow, that's so cool. Jews are so smart. They run all the big banks and control the world economy. I love a successful culture." Other Jewish people who have been to East Asia have talked about this too. In a famous incident in the 1970s, a group of Japanese dignitaries visiting Israel presented faculty at the Hebrew University with an ornate leather-bound copy of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion as a gift that showed their appreciation for the Jews and their dreams of world domination. And the university had to explain to them that the book is fake and was meant to make the Jews look bad. Okay, that's a lot of stuff, but first of all, is there any evidence that Yoshitsune did actually go to Ezo / Hokkaido? After all, those people claim that there were Ainu legends about Yoshitsune, right? Well, as Sarah Rebecca Schmid, who wrote the paper on which this script is mainly based, argued, the similarities between the Japanese Onzoshi Shimowatari, remember that's the story where Yoshitsune goes north and defeats a demon with a shakishori blowdown, and the Ainu version recorded in the Sanko Ezo Nishi, makes the assertion that this was a tale originally told by the Ainu people questionable. Considering that the Japanese presence on Aizu had been steadily increasing since the 17th century, it seems hardly feasible to suggest that the two types of narratives had no point of contact. Quite the opposite. It is likely that any version of this narrative was exported to Aizu, and that it originally was a fully Japanese legend based on the Onzoshi Shimawatari. Schmidt also suggested that the whole Yoshitsune escaped to Manchuria thing was a later addition. And what about the shrine that Suematsu mentioned? Well, there is a shrine to Yoshitsune in Hokkaido, called, rather creatively, Yoshitsune Shrine, in the small town of Biratori. But its founding was credited, according to its own website, to Kondo Juzo, a Japanese shogunate official who conducted a survey on Aizu in 1798. A book from 1936 about Japanese legends in Hokkaido, written by Fukase Haruichi, quoted a text from 1857 called Kyowa Sheiki, written by one Kubota Kozo, which said, "I had previously heard that the local people worshipped Minamoto Hangan, so I reached out to the host and asked him about it. He replied, 'The Ijin, literally barbarians, i.e. the Ainu, have some deities called Okikurumi Kamui and Shamikuru, who they revere. But I do not know what kind of deities they are. During the times when the territories belonged to the Bakufu in the Kansei period, three men, Kondo Juzo, Mogami Tokunai, and Uehara Komajiro, who were born in Matsume and knew the Aizu language, discussed the matter and determined that Okikurumi Kamui is Yoshitsune and Shamikuru is his retainer, Benkei." So, did you notice anything about that quote? Notice that it said that the three men determined that this Ainu deity is Yoshitsune, not that the people themselves told them that. So it means that the identification of Yoshitsune with Okikurumi is something that had been pushed on them by outsiders, not by the Ainu people themselves. And it's also worth noting that even the authors of the cited books at the time, in the 19th century, thought it was all BS. Kubota's host later explicitly states that he thinks the three men thought the whole thing up, and the text goes on to say that there is no proof that the two deities are Minamoto no Yoshitsune and Benkei. Even Fukase, the author of the 1936 Book of Legends, does not believe that the identification of Okikurumi with Minamoto no Yoshitsune is correct. He calls the Japanese people who spread this narrative, quote, irresponsible and low class, with no concept of history. As for Temujin's lost years, a Chinese scholar from not long after his life claimed that during the time before he returned to Mongolia in 1196, Temujin was a slave in Jin Dynasty China, a common fate for defeated steppe nomads, and a chapter in his life that the Khan would understandably be reluctant to discuss later. And when he came back, there's no record of anyone ever doubting that he was the real Temujin. Okay, so this is all bullshit, you might think, but why, though? It's easy to dismiss all of these as just another crazy conspiracy theory, but there was something interesting going on under the hood. And for that, we need to look at something else that was going on at the time. Let's go back to Kondo for a while, the guy who founded the temple to Yoshitsune in Hokkaido. Why did he conduct a survey in Hokkaido in the first place? Well, because the shogunate had noticed an increased Russian presence on the island. Hokkaido is as close to Russia as it is to the rest of Japan. 5 years before Kondo's own survey on the island, in 1793, the Russians conducted their own expedition in Hokkaido, led by one Adam Laxman. The expedition was meant to bring diplomatic ties with Japan, using Japanese castaways to do so, but ended in failure. In 1789, 9 years before Kondo's survey, there was an Ainu rebellion against the Japanese. Going even further back, between 1669 and 1672, around the time that the Yoshitsune lived theory started popping up in written records, the last large-scale uprising by the Ainu against the Japanese, the Shakushines War, took place. Now, the trade relationship between the Japanese and the Ainu had been intact for a long time, at least since the 7th century, but increased Japanese presence since the 14th century on Hokkaido had led to conflict between the two groups. The establishment of the Matsume Domain on the southernmost part of Hokkaido, this peninsula here, had led to further changes in the Japanese-Ainu relationship. The monopolization of trade by the Matsume clan had forced the Ainu into trading on unequal terms. By 1806, the Tokugawa shogunate had direct control over southern Hokkaido, and by the time of the Meiji period, the colonization of Hokkaido was in full swing. It wouldn't be too crazy to think that the popularity of the Yoshitsune as an Ainu god theory seemed to resurface when Hokkaido was in the news. It even seems like the whole thing was tied up to Japan's colonization of Hokkaido. This isn't my unique observation at all, but also the main thesis of Schmidt's paper. Quote, "The narrative of Yoshitsune's survival developed alongside Japanese territorial expansion in the north. Though this expansion cannot be described as a deliberate program, the Yoshitsune narrative must be understood in relation to the general intellectual consensus of the time. The colonization of Ezo was not formally carried out until the Meiji period, but it is evident that the texts brought forward by people like Kudo and Kondo, who supported a colonization of the island, were not detached idiosyncratic opinions, but reflected the attitudes of their times. If Japan's greatest historical hero fled up that way, clearly it's part of Japan. If the natives worship him as a god, clearly they're ready to become Japanese. Okay, but what about the Yoshitsune is Genghis Khan thing? Well, as Schmidt explains, while Ezo was the focus of territorial expansion during the 17th and early 18th centuries, the larger region in the north, and with it, the Russian presence in the region, increasingly turned into a topic of interest and concern in the course of the 18th century, and with it, more variants of the narrative developed. Though descriptions of the geography and territory were often only given in the vaguest of terms in these narratives, the references to a specific territory are of high importance. References to the Jin, Qing, and Yuan dynasties were made because all claimed territory in Manchuria, North Asia, and Mongolia. And the theory that Yoshitsune became Genghis Khan reached its peak popularity in the early 20th century, at which point Hokkaido was already an integral part of Japan and no area had an Ainu majority anymore, but Japan had set its colonial sights on Korea and beyond. At this point, Japan was suffering from empire envy. In a matter of decades, they'd caught up to the European powers in most ways. They had trains, factories, hospitals, universities, science labs, telegraphs, all every bit as good as anything you could find in Europe. But those places had one thing Japan didn't: colonies. This was not necessarily a position held by the elite. There's even documentation of imperial-era Japanese government leaders discussing colonialism as a means of placating the public, not necessarily something they wanted to do. The public often wasn't on board with the rapid technological modernization of the country, and said that if we're going to industrialize like the West, we ought to pillage like the West too. If we're going to have all these loud trains and smoke-spitting factories, said the rank-and-file Japanese at the dawn of the 20th century, then at least it should come with the assurance that Japan rules the world. And then, an existing myth bubbles to the forefront. An idea whose time has come. In an age when national greatness was associated with how much conquering you've done, the Japanese decided to believe that the greatest conqueror of them all had been one of them. That instead of centuries of isolation, letting the world pass by, once upon a time, a samurai had ruled from the Pearl River Delta to the Danube. Now, conquering all of Asia was their birthright. They were just building back the empire they'd had before. And Genghis Khan, didn't he strike fear into everyone's hearts? Didn't he show that the way to take a continent is through sheer brutality? A lot of different conditions led to the age of Japanese imperialism. As I talked about before, the Russo-Japanese War taught Japan that they could fight the world's great powers and win. The same flag flown at the decisive battle of the war with Russia was later flown at Pearl Harbor as a deliberate reference to what had then been Japan's greatest naval victory. But it's not at all out of the question to suggest that the particular savagery of Japan's conquests might have come from, or been excused by, the popular myth that this was nothing out of the ordinary for Japan. After all, 700 years ago, a great Japanese warlord did the same. When Japan occupied the Chinese province of Inner Mongolia, a culturally Mongol area, during World War II, they built a temple to Genghis Khan that's still a place of worship today. Every European empire ever has called itself the successor to Rome, and to some extent, nearly all of Asia has claimed the legacy of Genghis Khan at some point. Mongolia still does. They named the Ulaanbaatar airport after him. He's on their currency. In fact, they still have a traditional tribal religion that worships him as its main god, which I've mentioned a few times on this channel before because it just goes so hard. Yoshitsune was never actually revered as a god after his death. Not a lot of people get that honor. But the real Genghis Khan was. The image of the Khan as a vicious barbarian isn't universal. The Mughal Empire in India, a variety of Muslim empires in the Middle East, and every dynasty of Imperial China from the Yuan through to the Qing revered Genghis Khan as a noble lawgiver and the founder of their wise, civilized nations. But as for countries that looked at his rampages and said, "I wish we'd done that," Japan may stand alone. Not to say Japan is uniquely bloodthirsty, they took a silly local legend and ran with it. But they ran with it all the way to Nanjing. If I get cryopreserved and wake up hundreds of years from now, and I crack open a history textbook and learn that Elvis survived and became Donald Trump, I'd start to get worried about what the country I've found myself in is capable of.